Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We're playing the Georgia National Anthem first and then the Russian National Anthem second. This is a topic that is difficult because people have died, innocent people. And it's very hard to be Solomon-esque in a situation such as this. I do know that we don't know much about what really went on. That's something I'm sure of. Now, I spoke to a friend this morning who told me, Mike, I listen to your show every day, and you usually are right on the number. He said, but let me explain something. You said yesterday that Condoleezza Rice was over there as near as last week watching Georgian military maneuvers, and that almost as soon as she left, Georgia launched an attack against Russian emplacements. And he said your assumption was that Georgia was guided in this attack by the United States. He said actually the reverse may be true. He said to me he believes that U.S. spy satellites and intelligence agencies saw the Russians preparing for preparing for an invasion, and the Georgians struck first. That's what he told me. Now, I don't know what went on. I'm not privy to spy satellites, and I don't think he is either. We're just guys who are using our marbles to play the game called trying to figure things out because we live in interesting times. And if you care to comment on this situation, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There are many other topics, obviously, that we can talk about, but I don't think there's anything bigger than this. I think at this moment we can say we're not going to see the August 1917, you know, the drums of war maybe stopping. And Russia basically has already gotten what it wants. 5 days, they stopped Georgia's secessionist activities, destroyed Georgia's military, and so they can pause. I wonder what it cost Russia for this five-day incursion and what it would have cost us under George Bush and Dick Cheney. I wonder if anybody could run the numbers. I know this for sure. This I can guarantee you is true, that what Putin did in 5 days would have taken a lot longer under Bush-Cheney, and no doubt there would be court-martials for half of the paratroopers. No doubt one of the contractors would go in to rebuild what was broken, to serve the meals, do the laundry, clean the latrines. And I guess that's the difference between naked capitalism and a mixed market economy of slash communist capitalism. And here we are. Bush warns Russia. Medvedev orders halt to action. Fed auctions another $25 billion in loans. Oof, that's a bad one. And then there's a top story that just came out on Drudge minutes ago. One of the FCC commissioners says the return of the Fairness Doctrine could control web content. Now, I warned you. I warned all of you left-wingers that you were salivating to see a so-called Fairness Doctrine enacted. But what you didn't think through, because most of you on the left don't think, you react because you're group thinkers. You think that it would be legal to simply launch a government action against conservative talk radio. First of all, it doesn't work that way. Any such government intrusion into the free market of ideas would affect liberals as well as conservatives. It would affect ABC, CBS, and NBC because I'd make them do it. If you think I would sit here and simply let some hack from the government say, well, you said this, we're going to have to put the opposite opinion on, I would sue them. I would sue them, and I would force them to take my commentary on the ABC Nightly News, which is totally left-wing biased. Now we're hearing what I warned you about. When they came for Michael Savage, you cheered because you didn't like conservative politics. I warned you that the next they come for you. Don't you people understand that censorship is censorship is censorship? Well, maybe now you'll understand it. We don't need Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid dictating what you can hear and what you can read. Do you? You want Nancy Pelosi to dictate what can be heard and said? Now, on another note, while you're calling 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, questions for the day include, would Putin make a better president of the United States than any of the current candidates? If Vladimir Putin were president, what would he do to save America? You think he'd crack down on the illegal aliens from Mexico? You think he'd crack down on Medicaid fraud? Do you think he'd crack down on the oil oligarchs in America? Should we demand our money back from the Iraqi contractors? We've given contractors in Iraq $85 billion. Iraqi contractors? Cows in Berkeley? Moo. Is McCain wrong to defend Georgia so stridently? I don't even answer that. You know, today I had an inquiry from a major blogger, a major blog site in the blogosphere, who asked me, oh, some questions about the coming election. I'm not going to mention the organization because you'll see it when it comes out. But I'm going to read you some of what I sent him. And here was my response to the blog. It's a major leaguer top fiver. And I wrote this. I said, I can keep McCain from being elected. My audience is not only enormous but highly motivated. If they do not come out in droves to vote for McCain, he cannot win. John is making a huge mistake in disregarding what should be his core base, i.e. conservative voters. Instead, his fool of a campaign manager has him pandering to every audience but this one. He has not given an interview to conservative websites either, such as WorldNet Daily or Newsmax. He will not go before the talk radio audiences he needs. He is for granting of amnesty to illegal aliens. Only a race. Then he asked me, another question that he asked me was, do you shy away from criticizing Obama for fear of being labeled a racist? And my answer was this. Only a racist would shy away from criticizing Obama for fear of being labeled racist. Since I am not a racist, I do not fear such a label and have freely criticized Obama's far-left past, present, and future. His past, the Reverend Wright, will haunt him right to the election, as will his friendship with known left-wing bombers and terrorists such as Ayers. Please remember it was my audience that stopped the nomination of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court. I defined her as a nonentity. We blocked the Dubai port deal. We derailed the McCain-Kennedy amnesty bill. My listeners not only listen, they vote. McCain is being ill-advised by some within his own camp who are like Brutus. I'm Michael Savage, and I agree with this monologue. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Play the American National Anthem for a minute. I don't know. I'm going to clear out the other national anthems here. I really would rather talk about Fahrenheit 451, frankly, than... I love this song. All rise, please, and put your hand on your heart, and if you don't, you'll know who you are. I'm rising. I want to hear it. Just please, do me a favor. It's summertime. We're so gallantly streaming the rocket's red glare. Come on, sing it. Don't be shy. In there. That our flag was still there. Saved of that star-spangled banner yet wave. The land of the free and the home of the... All right, be seated. Let the games begin. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
is a savage nation. Look, I'd rather have Putin as an American ally than as an enemy of this country. And I have to reiterate what they did in 5 days. I haven't any idea how long it would have taken the United States of America to have suppressed a secessionist act of this nature. You know, the Russians lost numerous airplanes because we sent phenomenal anti-aircraft devices. The Israelis sent drones. So I don't think we know the full extent of this war. I'd really like to know the cost to Russia of this incursion. But it's interesting to me that they've achieved what they wanted to in 5 days. And many of you are saying, well, we should step in. I don't understand how you can make such a statement. How in the world would you want this country to get overextended in yet another foreign entanglement? How? We can't do it. We don't have the military for it. The country's almost broke. Take a look at our banks. You've only seen the tip of the iceberg here. The war has fundamentally undermined the currency and bankrupted the economy. If you ask me what the number one reason for the whole meltdown, it's the war. Then, of course, it's the pirates on Wall Street or basically all Ponzi scheme operators. We understand the two work hand in glove, incidentally. You'll find overlapping interlocking corporate directorships between investment banks, I'm sure, and contracting companies in Iraq, I'm positive. Can I prove it? No. So I'm not privy to that information. But logic would dictate that when a country is handed over to a ruling corporate hierarchy, there's virtually no oversight. They are the government. I was saying to my friend this morning, can the country be saved? I said, well, we talk. I said, yes, it can be saved if the people save it. He said, it's always been that way. Whenever a democracy's been taken over by the elites and they're corrupt, when the elites become corrupt, it's the people in the street who take the country back from the corrupt elites. I said, well, man, we don't have much time left. What do you mean we take it back? How do we get these bums out of office? They have the lowest rating in history. Congress has a lower rating than George Bush. And the people are sitting here stymied as to how two of these two doofuses on both sides can be running for the presidency. By the way, going back to the national anthem before the last break here on the Savage Nation, I got to tell you something. I believe you could divide this country pretty clearly along a fault line of those who are moved by our national anthem and those who are not moved by it. And then there's another fault line, those who mock it and laugh at it. In the last category would be all of the so-called progressives. In the secondary category would be the illegal aliens and those who watch Oprah Winfrey. In the first category would be people over the age of 50 who grew up in America that was super patriotic and who learned to salute the flag every morning, which is so important for children to understand that they come from a nation, they are a member of this nation, and that they have to support the nation. It's so important for children to have this. And yet, I remember the arguments in the 60s that we should eliminate the loyalty oath amongst teachers. I had no idea it was communists who were who had infiltrated the teachers' unions and were saying, oh, no, we don't need a loyalty oath. I didn't know the bigger picture at that time. I was a young kid. I was a teacher. I knew from nothing. All I knew was, you know, go to work, teach a class, go home, go out and party every night with my friends, go dancing, listen to music. Most people in their 20s don't know jack about anything. And that's why you younger people better listen to us older people, because we know everything. We know much more than you do about what is going on in this country and where it's going to head unless we stop the elites from taking us over the cliff, if they have not already. Now, let's go back to the issue at hand in the caucuses. You look in the dictionary, caucuses, Caucasian, caucus, Caucasian, caucuses, caucus. And here we have a war that just erupted, a small war in the Caucasus region. And that's very interesting because it was once thought that this was the region where mankind originally evolved, was in the Caucasus region. Then, of course, the modern anthropology said that we all came from Africa. I'm sure that in 20 years they'll discover that we've all come from Antarctica and evolved from the penguins. Science today is as much a reflection of politics as anything else. What do you mean we all came from Africa? Lucy was my great-grandmother? I'm sorry. I mean, it makes no sense to me. I don't believe that. I believe that they made a mistake in their analysis. But anyway, it doesn't matter where we all came from. All that matters is where we're all going. And in the truth of fact, we're all going to the same place, which is an unknown place. And the minute we come to understand that, Maybe we can start living together for a better world. Hey, hey, hear, hear. Savage for president. That's a pretty good line. We don't know where we've come from, but we all know where we're going. And the sooner we realize we're all going to an unknown place, maybe we can all pull together to make this a better world. That's not bad. Maybe they can send that to John McCain, whatever. So I don't know that I want to get too worked up over this. I'm glad that it seems that the shooting has stopped. I'm just curious how Russia was able to do it in 5 days while we're bogged down in Iraq after 5 or 6 years. I think the latter has to do with George Bush's rules of engagement and the desire to keep the war going as long as possible so the contractors can mulct the public. M-U-L-C-T, word taught to me by my immigrant father. Although he was not educated, my father, he loved words and vocabulary, and he made sure he learned words in English and taught them to me. He used to love Lincoln, and as we walked those streets, he would say to me, "Remember, Michael, as you get older, you'll come to see the wisdom of Abe Lincoln. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time." And I love that, and it's true. But we got a media that thinks that we're all idiots. And we've got a political class that doesn't care what we are. They're disconnected and they laugh at us. They're not even into fooling us. They don't care. They know that we have no recourse. We're powerless. What do you mean, redress our grievances? Are you joking? Redress our grievances? To whom? To whom? You're going to write your congressman? How about your Senator Boxer in California? Maybe she'll listen to you. Or maybe Senator Feinstein will stop with the war profiteering for 3 minutes. Oh, yeah, come on in. Let me hear what you got to say. Sure. Where are you going to redress your grievances? Well, that's why talk radio is an endangered species. That's why the blog is an endangered species. The blogosphere. Because we do redress our grievances to each other. And the power-mad lunatics don't even want us to have that outlet. Don't you understand? We have no power over them, but they don't even want us to criticize them. They want to Sovietize the United States of America. And where is it coming from? The Democrats. The Democrats are trying to Sovietize America. Who would have expected an Italian grandmother from San Francisco to be a descendant of Mussolini?
Savage.
I went to Chinatown. Way back in old Hong Kong to get some egg foo young.
It is the Savage
Nation. Heard of gong.
All right, it's too much burden already carrying the world on my shoulders. We made our point. If you ask me to summarize my position, for whatever it's worth, on this tragic mini-war, it would be this. George's decision, although not altogether unjustified, was a bizarre strategic mistake, period. And that's the caption on michaelsavage.com in an article we linked from St. Petersburg Times. But that's a very good summary of where I stand. George's decision, although not altogether unjustified, was a bizarre strategic mistake on the part of whoever decided to do this. That's my opinion. Now, I'm sure that there'll be differences of opinion, but as I said to you, they may have had to do it. Maybe they saw Russia was coming in, and they decided to do a preemptive strike against Russian troops. That could be the truth here. I don't really know. Nor do I think we'll ever know. You know, the people who know are the ones who watch the spy satellites. I watch wild police chases at night rather than a spy set. Actually, my favorite show last night was Disorder in the Courtroom. That's a great show. I love seeing outbursts in the courtroom. So uptight. No, it's frightening when the guys go berserk. The most touching, when a family member, what would you do? They march in a guy who killed one of your children? The father, several times the fathers leap over the bailiffs. It's crazy. Judges sit there. Then they had the crying judge from Florida. The flying judge from Florida. A freak show. Remember last year with the Anna Nicole Smith judge, the Brooklyn judge? Told everyone about his tennis shorts and looked for a TV show. My God, what a country. What a country. God bless America. Speaking of which, normally today it's Chicken Curry Tuesday on the Savage Nation because I have a habit. I try to keep my habits simple. Tuesday I like to go to a certain Chinese restaurant for the chicken curry. All right, I did it again today. And I walked out. I threw the money down. I wouldn't eat it. That was it. It's the last I'm going in there. There's three other restaurants that I went to for 20 years I never go into, and I'm not going to mention them. Some of them are better than this place. This was the last straw. Is it racism? I don't understand it. They look me in the eye. They know me for 25 years. I say, give me the chicken curry with no grease, no oil. All right, it comes out. When they do it right, they make it dry. And I say to her, I said, listen to me, dry, no grease. And they give me the yes, comes out coated with grease. I said, look, I can't eat it. I'm sorry, no nice talk. You know, these are, how shall I put it? There are all sorts of classes of people from every country, as you well know. These people are like from Katz's delicatessen theory, which is yell at the customer who doesn't like the food. There's no subtlety here. So I said, I'm not eating it. I'm sorry. Give it back. She comes back 10 minutes later, the same dish. They must think white people are stupid. They know. I said, you know me for 20 years. I cannot and won't eat grease. So now the owner comes over and she starts to tongue lash me. Now, needless to say, I'm not the kind of guy who takes tongue lashing easily, but I didn't react to her. I said, I'm sorry. I'm not going to eat it. She says, oh, they don't want to cook for you. I said, they don't want to cook for me? You give me a dish now that you could put in the tread of a tank? If your tank stopped running because of rust, you could take your chop suey and stick it in the tank tread. The thing would run better. It wouldn't squeak, I said in my own lingo. No, no, you don't have to pay. I said, all right, thank you very much. I'm not going to argue with you. I got up. No, you don't have to pay. I put down $10. I waved. I said, here, I pay. Bye-bye. Never go back. That's it. I don't understand it. If they think they're going to stay in business by doing this to people, they're crazy. You know what it is? It's a liberal city where people are afraid of ethnic minorities. And they figure they can do anything they want, run their mouth at you. And they make you feel that they're doing you a favor if you eat in their restaurant. You know what? There's a certain gesture for that from the Bronx that I can't project on the radio. But it consists of one hand over the other in a certain kind of gesture. That's what I'd like to say. Yeah, it's take your food and shove it. So then, but I'm still hungry. Where am I going to eat? Big deal. So I went over to an Indian buffet. Now, the danger of a buffet in the middle of the day is it'll put you to sleep if you have no self-control. I limited it to one single plate. I watched the news, and I left happily. And here I am. Now, I had to share this with you to bring you down to earth. Because as Lin Yutang wrote in The Importance of Living, life consists in watching your neighbor fall off the roof and having your hair cut every 2 weeks. Now, what does that mean? It means that we can only talk so much about international affairs. But as I've said to you, Cato the Elder in ancient Rome, when he wrote about ancient Rome, the historian, he said people may up to a certain point in ancient Rome have cared about what Roman legion was doing what, where, and which foreign province. But at a certain point, they didn't care. And what they cared about was the pebble in their shoe, which means how much does gas cost? What about the banking crisis? Are they losing their home? Why is the school so horrible? Why has California devolved and collapsed into this leftist nightmare of a state? Can it ever be saved? Why are taxes so high? I mean, those are the real issues. And then it comes back down to the election. Which one of the two clowns is going to do less harm to America? That's really all it comes down to, because neither of them are the doctor to cure this country. What you have here is an advanced case of cancer of the political system, and you got two inadequate doctors here. Which one is going to do a less of a damage to the patient? McCain or Obama? That's the only question you have to ask yourself. Don't think for a minute either of them are going to save this country. The man who can save this country or the woman has not yet appeared on the political horizon. Maybe it's your daughter. Maybe it's your son. I don't know who it is. But I know that the best and the brightest are not in the political arena. I know that for a fact. I know that the alphas never went into politics. The alphas I have known and the alphas I know are nowhere in the political arena. They're in every other arena, doctors, lawyers, engineers, talk show hosts, you name it. They're not in politics. Politics in this country has attracted the betas and the deltas, and in this case, two gammas, if you know anything about Huxley, and I'm sure you do, that's all. I have to talk to them about Russia. I started this, now I have to finish it. Now with all the callers, they're lining up around the block. Let's see the story, maybe I can get you off that. Based on a Rasmussen poll, says voters say media bias is a bigger problem than campaign money. Ooh, what a genius. I'm trying to stay relevant. Every day, Rasmussen puts out a... Who cares what Rasmussen says? Swing voters are on the alert of biased reporting. Wow, that's Nobel Prize-winning intelligence. Wow, what an insight. Okay. Use of Iraq contractors caused billions, report says. No kidding. No, in Iraq. Let me ask you something. If you were rebuilding your house, would you hire a contractor from your hometown or someone from Iraq? Would you like a guy in a dirty nightshirt to come and redo your attic? Or the guy down the street who's been doing it, who you... Why would we hire Iraq contractors? The guys couldn't liberate themselves from Saddam. They're going to be able to rebuild their country? This is the first war the United States has fought where so many of the people and resources involved aren't of the military, but from contractors. No kidding. And you're telling me the money doesn't flow back from the Iraqi contractor to the American who got him? I can't look at this anymore. I have the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, report. Your hair will stand up. You want me to read it to you? It's boring. What? Total spending by the U.S. government and other contractors for security provided by contractors in the Iraq. Security provided by contractors. Now, why would we need a private company to provide security when we have a military over there? $6 to $10 billion from 03 to 07? As of 08, approximately 25,000 to 30,000 employees of private security contractors were operating in Iraq. Why? Why? Answer, so that they can mulct the public. M-U-L-C-T, look it up. This is what's going on in my country today. You want food? There was a time in the military when a guy cooked. He was enlisted and he cooked. Another one did this, a laundry guy, a cook. But no, not under old Bushkey. No, sorry, Bob. They figured out, wait a minute. There's not enough money in that. You can't make any money on a tray that way. If you have a guy cooking a vat of potatoes and a roast beef dinner. Wait a minute. Let's get one of our buddies in the contracting business over there. Well, that's a good idea. $16 a tray. And I was told by a soldier, if you go back for a second helping, the government gets billed another $16. That's where you wonder why the war is expensive and why the economy is busted out. Don't look any further. Don't look any further, Buster. That's why I say I can guarantee you one thing. This I can guarantee you. That when Putin sent his troops into Georgia, he didn't send contractors along to cook and do the laundry. This I can guarantee you. I guarantee you in the 5 days they didn't send contractors from a Soviet company, a Russian company, to cook the meals and do the laundry. And to clean the guns and to oil the tanks and to change the oil. They said, we sent the Texaco team over. We're the men from Texaco and we do the tanks for you. Because we don't want our troops to get their hands dirty, they're liable to sue. Look, if a guy has to change the oil of a tank himself or a mechanic, they don't even have mechanics in the military. They probably send contractors over as mechanics. Now you understand why we're there 6 years later, in my opinion. But I'd rather talk about ethnic restaurants and the racism towards white people. How they look at you and the food they throw at you, the gop. Because they figure white liberals will say nothing. To me, that's more important than corrupt contracting. Not all ethnic restaurants, only about 90% of them behave this way. Play them, We Are the Men of Texaco. I got off on a show.
We Are the Men of Texaco.
Turn it off. They're not interested. It's not funny. See, I have timing. I can even use a bad piece as a good piece if I throw it off at the right time. Most people don't understand that timing is everything in talk radio and everything else. You certainly know it's true in sex. Don't edit that word. It's only the word sex. Now they're sitting on the switch. They expanded my... my kill switch to a minute now. Why don't you just give me a three-hour kill switch on the show? They're so afraid of anything I'll say, they got a one-minute delay so they can kill everything. Every third word, eh. So as I was saying, a funny thing happened on the way to the Washington, D.C., Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, let's talk about the ethnic food. I called before. You knew I had a restaurant, a Thai restaurant. I called you a while back.
And oh, yes. I remember this from years and years ago.
You're absolutely correct. And, Mike, I just got back from Thailand, so I can tell you the double dip deal. Let me tell you how it works, okay? They have an attitude towards Americans like you owe them something, not just the fact that they got a job, but they look at us for a minimum of 15, 20% tip because their own people don't throw down a dollar on $100.
Wait, you're talking about when they have a restaurant over here?
Yeah, restaurant over here. And
okay, right. Right, and Whitey has to leave a 20% tip.
20% tip, and then if you walk away without a 20% tip, they're like, oh, that's Falang guy. Falang is like a slang term for a white guy or American guy. Oh, that's Falang guy. He wouldn't leave. You know, look, he only left me 10%. But wait a minute. The guy was waving his hand like the American flag looking for a glass of water. Where were you? You're scratching your butt on
How about the white people who go into these restaurants and when they get a glass of water, they say thank you and bow down on the table with their hands together like they're having a religious ceremony?
Yeah, the phony Hindu Buddhist.
They're all. Well, you ask for a napkin because they're very good on a single napkin. And you say, may I have another napkin? You get it. Oh, thank you. Everything to the white person. Oh, thank you. 80 times thank you. The guy gives you the food. Oh, thank you. Like, what's he in business? Then you pay him. He should say thank you to you. And they go out, the liberals here in the Bay Area, and they say, oh, thank you. Like, it was the most miraculous, mystical experience of their life.
You know, Mike, in D.C., 50%, maybe more, maybe less, D.C. area, 60, 70%. They go out of their way to look like Ricky Martins when they come in. And they bow down. And, you know, you're just supposed to go in there, eat, get some service, pay the bill, right? But it's the same thing like you say. It's a magical mystery tour. And then, God forbid, they should learn.
You know what it is to a liberal? Going into an Asian restaurant for a liberal is the equivalent of a church attendance in their parents' generation. They think that they're doing something good for multiculturalism by attending the restaurant and exposing themselves to the to the beauties of the foreign culture.
Let me tell you about Thailand also.
Have you ever seen liberals with their children in an Asian restaurant teaching them? You know, I cannot eat in a restaurant with children with coloring books, Mike. I don't know about you. There's something about ding-dong school in a restaurant. I can't take it.
They throw the bowl of rice all over. I remember going up to a guy one time.
But wait, no, let's get off that for a minute. How about children, liberals taking their children to restaurants with coloring books and Crayolas? And I mean, I'm talking upscale restaurants now.
No.
They're in there till 9, 9:30. What are these kids on, speed? Who ever heard of a child eating at 9 or 9:30?
Mm-hmm.
I go to an Italian restaurant in Marin County, California. They're there at 9 o'clock, the little people, with coloring books. And the worst part, Mike, is the parents who try to show how smart their children are by giving them a lesson at the table, like an Encyclopedia Britannica story at the table, that you should take a look. Oh, what a smart child you have. They're wonderful. Great. I'm glad you brought them out. Can't they have a cutoff time for children under the age of 10, like 9 o'clock, so I can safely go and have a meal?
And the other thing is they want it free. They want it free for the kids.
Well, they want to have children's play. But I have a friend, wait, don't get so carried away. I have a friend who goes and asks for children's portion of spaghetti, and he's a grown-up. What do you do with that?
Throw them out.
So did you leave I hear the restaurant business is the worst business in the world.
Terrible. And you know what? They'll always play you, Mike. They play the hand like they don't know. They play Dopey, you know, the Seven Dwarfs, Dopey. And the next day you could tell them the same thing, and the next day and they look at you, they shake their head.
But I ate in this joint for 25 years, and every week I come in, I want it dry, no grease, no oil. Okay, they give me and it comes out like somebody poured oil all over. And I'm talking bad. This is bad for the arteries. God knows what the oil comes from, what's it extracted from. I said, I'm not eating it. Why did they have to do it to me again? Did they think I would take it because she came over with a big mouth?
You see, they think everyone who is American will take their crap. And
well, I didn't take it. In fact, I didn't eat it. She says, you don't have to pay. That was an insult to me. I threw the money down. I said, no, I am paying.
Well, you should have not paid, Mike.
No, I want to pay. I want to pay because I'm not a poor man. I will not have this kind of abuse. I'll never go in there again. It's over. Now, I want to ask you something. And this is a general question to the world. It's far more important than the war in the Caucasus. Have you noticed the quality of restaurant food, primarily Asian food, has gone drastically down in the last few months? The portions of rice have gotten smaller. The protein quantity has gone down. The vegetables are inferior. Am I the only one seeing what's going on here? I'll be right back. I'm now going to declare the savage greaseless doctrine for restaurants since Nancy Pelosi wants to put forward the fairness doctrine, which, of course, is the unfairness doctrine. It's censorship. I'm putting forward the savage greaseless doctrine. And these are rules. I'm going to give you just four I wrote in case you go to a restaurant. One, if you could slip on the food, don't eat it. Two, if it's still moving, don't eat it. If the protein has cilia on it, don't eat it. And I say that with all seriousness because I once was eating something that looked like chicken. And when I picked it up and put my glasses on, it had little cilia around the sides of the fragment of protein. I had no idea where it came from. So we just found some Chinese restaurant horror stories. Let's see. My favorite Chinese restaurant of all time got caught with skinned cats in their freezers in the restaurant. Since it was for personal consumption, they didn't get in trouble, but they did lose most of their business. Ugh, I heard about that. Oh, wait, I have another. I'm reading now from Yahoo. I have another. I went to pick up some food from a local Chinese restaurant last year, and the old man making the food had fingernails at least half an inch, and they were black. God, it was disgusting. Okay. Chinese restaurant in Edmonton, Canada was shut down after they found dogs and coyotes in the kitchen, fridge, and freezer. This is no urban legend. I saw it in the Global Edmonton News Hour. They like to vacuum and sweep near your table, and they get mad when you have a problem with the dust and hair in your egg foo young. Yeah, what is it about vacuuming while you're eating? How could you even eat listening to a vacuum? Like if they started at 2 o'clock. These are urban legends. The cats. My mom found a cockroach in a wonton soup when she told the workers all they did was bring her a new bowl of soup. She's lucky. When I was a kid, if you think this is limited to Chinese restaurants, you're wrong. There was a so-called dairy restaurant in my father's store on Ludlow Street. It's probably a discotheque today or a bar. I hear it's a very fashionable name, but it was a horrible slum when I was a kid. This was a dirty, greasy luncheonette that served dairy food, so to speak. So I went and got a tuna sandwich. I come back to my father's store. I was working with him. I open it up, and there's a fly in it. I was a little boy, and I started to cry. I don't know why I cried. My father got mad at me and then got mad. He got mad at me for crying. He told me to stop it. Then he grabbed my hand. He grabbed the sandwich, and he walked me down the street. He went into the store, and he yelled at the guy, "How dare you give my son a tuna sandwich with a fly?" The guy looked at it. He says, "All right, at least I didn't charge you for the meat." I mean, that's the kind of, attitude they had in those days, like he cared. So it's not just that. It's wherever there's poverty. And that's it. That's the story. If you went in the kitchen of most restaurants, you wouldn't be too happy. That's why I like restaurants with open kitchens, But where'd the food come from? How much of it comes from China today? How many are the vegetables? I mean, I grow my own tomatoes. I know where they come from. Am I going to grow a cow now?
Savage.
Of the Olympics, we are playing this highly motivational music for you, for those of you who cannot be in Beijing and wish you were there. I'm glad I'm not there. In fact, I haven't watched the Olympics at all. Wherever I go, if they're running it, I walk out. I'm not interested in it. I don't care. I was interested in the Russia-Georgia thing, but there's only so much you can talk about it. I made my point, and you made your point, and now we're talking about the demise of food in so many restaurants. Not all. Mainly these, I would have to say mainly the cheaper restaurants are going, they're going downhill really fast. They used to give you value for your money. I don't know what it meant. I don't know. I do. Rice is expensive. So they take it out on the dish. So today I told you there was the last straw with a 25-year relationship in a restaurant. I walked out and paid. I wouldn't eat it. Three times I said, "I don't eat grease and oil. What are you looking at me?" And they looked you right in the eye. "Yes, Mike, we know." And they bring it out saturated, rolling in oil. I said, "No oil. She made it dry last week." Brings it back again bad. I mean, I don't really need to eat egg foo old, to enjoy myself. And I could do without the pigeon curry. I understand that the losers in Beijing from the Chinese team will become once beaten kidney over rice as the dish, not as the diner. Oh, yeah, heck of a country. You're getting great reportage out of China. You're getting the real McCoy out of NBC. They're really a great investigative team. They always have been. Oh, yeah. You really know what's going on in China. Absolutely. They're really covering it. So what do you want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. Restaurants, Olympics. How about this little story? U.S. acts to open borders to foreigners with HIV. After more than 20 years on the books, a little-known yet strictly enforced federal law barring foreigners with HIV or AIDS from entering the country is on its way out thanks to George Bush. Isn't that nice? Isn't that touching? It is so good to be a compassionate nation. Here's another story from my website. Muslim man pleads guilty to trying to run over students. Oh, my God. You're kidding. He did it on purpose? That can't be. According to CAIR, nobody would do that from their religion. Remember the story in March of 06, Muhammad Tahiri Azhar rented a Jeep Cherokee and drove it through the pit, a popular student gathering space at the University of North Carolina? He said he did it on purpose. Proudly. Oh, yeah. One case after another swept under the rug by the political class. Read the story. Illegal immigrants found making military parachutes. Again, Asheville, North Carolina. Calling it a possible threat to national security, federal immigration agents raided a parachute manufacturing company in Asheville on Tuesday. They took into custody 59 illegal aliens who were working on the assembly line making parachutes for the U.S. Armed Forces. Oh, wow. How'd that happen? Mills Manufacturing has made parachutes for the military since World War II. ICE agents say the company cooperated in the investigation have been duped by false identity papers provided by the illegal aliens. Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, they've been duped. The owner said that they're removing the illegal immigrants, plugged the gap at the mill manufacturing plant that could have been a threat to members of the military who used those parachutes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They all come here to work. What else do we have for you in the news, on the Savage News? Savage News. Many of Muhammad Tahiri Azhar's victims have recovered from their injuries, but they're still dealing with emotional problems. More than 2 years after Muhammad drove a rented SUV into a UNC Chapel Hill gathering place. You can hear a story. Tahiri's drawn-out legal proceeding did not help Wooten get over those fears. Every day you see him on TV, see him in the courtroom, makes him remote, brings back those memories. Tahiri Azhar pled guilty Tuesday morning to 9 counts of attempted first-degree murder. The judge indicated he would consolidate the plea into 2 counts of attempted first-degree murder with the sentences served consecutively. He could serve a minimum of 20 years and 10 months to a maximum of 33 years. At the time of the attack, he told police he wanted to kill people in response to the U.S. government's treatment of Muslims abroad. He also told police he expected to die as a result of his actions, either by people at the scene attacking him or police shooting him. Nah, how could that happen? People at the scene attacking him in America? You must be kidding. Attacking someone trying to kill you, an ethnic minority, trying to kill you, screaming, I hate you, whitey. Attacking him? You must be joking. You would have gone to jail for 50 years. Since he expected to die, he left a letter at his house, which he told authorities about after his arrest. He's very clear in this letter that his intent was to kill people. Tahiri Azhar said he rented the Jeep because he thought it would do the most damage. Does this to college kids, no less. In his letters, he explained that he planned to injure students as retaliation for the treatment of Muslims abroad. What this psycho piece of human offal should remember is that many thousands of our men died to liberate Muslims abroad from psychotics like him. There's your story for you. There's your story for you. Go ahead, read it. Plea brings closure for University of North Carolina. Closure. What kind of word is that? What a liberal word, closure. Who invented that closure? Healing. Maybe I needed closure as a kid for things that happened to me. I don't know about you. I got along pretty well without closure. I have wounds in me the size of the Grand Canyon in my emotions, and I'm still here. What do you mean closure? Everything that happens to you need closure, and dolls and balloons, you shh. Everyone needs closure. Everything happens. Everything is a weakness. Human condition. What a group of saps we become. Closure. We don't need closure. We need anger. We don't need anger management. We need to be taught anger. Instead of having anger management classes, we would have how to feel anger and how to express anger in America. We'd be a better nation. Bunch of sheeple. A Muslim man pleads guilty in trying to run over students. That won't make it to your local paper, will it? Oh, no. That won't be in the NYT, Los Angeles Times, you name it. Nope. Now, tied into that story is the Muslim group trying to run over Michael Savage. Protect freedom of speech, support the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund. Yeah, read that one. That's right. And with a little help from the liberal judges appointed by Bill Clinton, they just might take away my freedom of speech, and next they'll come after you in the blogs and on the left. Trust me. Right now it's me, tomorrow it's you. It's just like the Fairness Doctrine. And even if you don't like my politics, you better protect me, because they will come for you. I can guarantee you. Now, I see you won't stop calling about restaurants in Russia, so I'm stuck. I started it, and there's nothing I can do about it. No one's calling about Chinese restaurants. I'm not going to eat there anymore. I'm finished. It's over. I can't do it anymore. If they look you in the eye, and they know you for 20 years, and they say yes, and they bring it out greasy and look you in the eye and say it's not greasy, are you going to go back to a place like that? These are intelligent people. I know the owners. Why would they do this to me? And I'm not mentioning the name of the place on Sansom Street off Broadway. I will not do that. I will not do that. Not at all. Sacramento, Ron, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Hey, my younger brother worked for a big-name pest control company, and he used to go into the Asian restaurant and spray early in the mornings before anybody showed up. And the night before, they would take the meat, the chicken, the pork, the beef out of the deep freeze to defrost overnight, these big plastic tubs. Well, when he would come in the morning to flip on the night, a billion roaches would just run in every direction. They were all over the meat. So
You mean they were defrosting in the bag or outside the bag?
They were defrosting inside large plastic tubs in the open with roaches crawling all over.
Oh, God in heaven.
That makes you hungry for Chinese food, huh?
Oh, my God. I can't take it anymore. I know people who won't eat that food. I can't help it. I have a real love for it, but I'm finished with it. It's over.
Horrible.
It's horrible. What am I going to wind up in, Arby's? Or I don't know where to eat anymore. I think fast food is safer than these restaurants lately. If I go to Burger King on the weekend and I get like a grilled chicken sandwich, it's probably safer than most of the food I'm eating. I don't know what I'm going to tell you. I can't raise my own beef. As far as I go now, I have only tomatoes and fruit. For a kid from the Bronx, it's a miracle for me to see a fruit grow. I had peaches this year from my orchard. I had apricots. I was like an Abkhazian. Talk about the Caucasus, you know, the long-lived people of Abkhazia. Remember that story in the 70s, that the longest-lived people on Earth were from the Caucasus? And then the researchers went there trying to find out, what was their secret to long life? One said it was apricot seeds, apricots and apricot pits, and blah, blah. We know apricots are phenomenal in beta-carotene. But we don't eat the seeds. You got to grind up the seeds to get a little of the hydrocyanic acid, a little bit of the cyanide, which quenches the cancer cells because they metabolize oxygen at a higher rate than normal cells, which is why you're supposed to eat apple seeds. And some other foods which have the same mini amounts of the hydrocyanic acid, which is a small amount of cyanide. It's an interesting, I mean, it's very interesting. It connects to the old disgrace theory of Laetrile, but there's actually scientific reason behind eating foods that were once traditional in the American diet, such as apple seeds, for example. Or I'll give you another one. What's that one? Lima beans. No one eats lima beans anymore, but they were once a pretty big staple of the American farm diet. Lima beans contain hydrocyanic acid. I wrote books on this 25 years ago. You know, I studied this in great detail, but I still try to eat some of those foods. You look at the average American diet, it's quite limited. They eat a very narrow band of foods, the average American, with very, very few vegetables and fruits. And that's one of the reasons we have such horrendous, tremendous rates of congenital diseases in this country. It's related to the denatured foods. And this is an old story to those of you who have listened to me for years and grew up years ago in the health food movement like I did and understood the great genius of Linus Pauling and so many of the other pioneers. And I've not forgot any of the lessons I learned and taught over the years, and I'm not going to. If you think I'm going to turn to a pill for every problem, you're mistaken. It's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally. It's why I wrote Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. It's why I wrote so many other books. And it's what makes me, I'm going to finish in a political way, it's why I come on the show. In many ways, what I give you politically is the whole grain version of the political story. In most of the other media, what you're getting is the refined white bread version. Here you're getting the whole wheat version of the story. So if you want the whole grain version of any political story, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. I will be right back. An amazing story. Severe Islamic law which bans suggestive cucumbers cost al-Qaeda public support in Iraq. I'm not making this up. A bizarre ruling banning women from buying suggestively shaped vegetables such as cucumbers and the brutal slaying of children lost al-Qaeda the support of the Iraqi population. It emerged yesterday. So in other words, it wasn't the U.S. troops. It was a cucumber that did it. It wasn't the U.S. troops and the surge that drove al-Qaeda out. It was a cucumber. I guess Obama will claim that cucumbers won the victory and won the peace in Iraq. Al-Qaeda's enforcement of a severe form of Islamic law sapped support among the people for its campaign against American and Iraqi forces, allowing Arab tribal leaders to drive al-Qaeda out. I saw them slaughter a nine-year-old boy like a sheep because his family didn't pledge allegiance to them. Then there's a picture of a cucumber. It says they even killed female goats because their private parts were not covered and their tails were pointed upward. The severe Islamic law imposed by al-Qaeda forbid women from buying cucumbers, which were regarded as male and could only be bought by men. Isn't that a wonderful interpretation? Indianapolis, David, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm a liberal American, and I know how much you love liberals, and I'm calling to see why we're not invading Russia right now. If Russia was to go and invade Great Britain, we would have troops so fast up over there and make their heads spin.
I don't know. Wait. I'm not following you. You're saying we should have a war with Russia, and you say you're a liberal?
Yes.
Yeah. Sir, it sounds like you're more deranged than you are a liberal, because aren't liberals against war?
Yeah, but Georgia is a valuable ally. They just recalled 2,000 troops from Iraq, and that's less manpower.
Wait, aren't you against the war in Iraq?
Yeah.
And you're against the war in Afghanistan, but you want to start a new war with Russia?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you're a perfect voter for Obama. He's got his man in you. That's the kind of lack of thinking that Obama needs in order to win. Thanks for the call. See, when they can't compute and there's no logic, they're a perfect Democrat. Albany, New York. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Savage, I got a great story. I know someone that went to a Chinese restaurant in Albany, and they ended up going to the emergency room because there was something on their tongue. And honest to God, there's a report to prove it. They had a leech removed from the back of their tongue. They thought it was something other than like a growth, it was a leech.
And did the restaurant charge extra for the leech, for the bloodletting? Because it is a legitimate medical practice in some parts of the world.
The restaurant said it never happened and that they must have got the leech somewhere else. But there's
yeah,
no way
right.
It could have come.
That's it. I'm finished. First of all, I don't eat raw foods unless I grow them. What's this raw food thing in America? Where'd this come from? Raw food. You know, Claude Lévi-Strauss, the great French anthropologist, wrote a treatise decades ago called The Raw and the Cooked. In one of my graduate degrees as an anthropology prior to the doctorate, but Lévi-Strauss wrote a great book called The Raw and the Cooked, and his theory was, and quite a famous one at that. It's probably been forgotten by now by most of the uneducated people in the anthropological world who have turned everything into a political diatribe against the West. Lévi-Strauss, his contention was that the separation between a civilized and uncivilized societies was the raw and the cooked. And it was uncivilized societies that ate raw food, and that was the advent of fire and cooking that delineated the beginning of civilization as we know it. You have to agree with that. And yet you have lunatics in Marin County who built their whole lives around raw food. In essence, this is explains the entire progressive mentality, which is a degression or a regression to tribalism and a primitivism that is not based upon any science whatsoever. And please don't tell me about enzymes, which you don't even know what an enzyme is.
Savage.
I've come to the personal conclusion that I actually want the country to see who I am, who I really am. But I don't know what the result of that would be. But for me personally, I'd rather be successful or unsuccessful based on who I really am, not based on some plastic Ken doll that you put up in front of audiences. That's not me, you know?
No, no. That's for sure. You picked some bimbo this time. At least we know the real you. And this is only the beginning of the real you. As I say, if you actually looked into the cases that this ambulance chaser won over the years, you'd see the real John Edwards. Forget about the girl. That's nothing to me. A guy like that, cheating on his wife, what are you talking about? Does the sun rise and set every day? That's a shock to you. A guy that in love with himself who thinks he's a cute boy. You're shocked he had an affair with a dog like her? But the real story is how he made his hundreds of millions. That's the real story. Look into it. Take a look at the cases John Edwards won. In almost every case, it was a tragedy of a congenital disorder, meaning a birth defect, that he convinced the toothless, brainless jury was the result of medical malpractice. This is a big story. Here's another story that just came out. Judge doesn't buy Pennsylvania woman's shopaholic defense. A federal judge in Pittsburgh didn't buy a woman's defense who claimed a shopaholic disorder caused her to steal nearly $758,000 from a former employer. The woman was sentenced to 33 months in prison. Authorities said the woman stole the money from Westine International, a subsidiary of Westinghouse Electric Company, by using a company American Express card to pay for vacations, home improvements, jewelry, and Mercedes-Benz and other items. She covered up the thefts by creating 1,700 bogus expense invoices. The woman's attorney said she couldn't help herself because she was a shopaholic. But Judge Danita Ambrose agreed with prosecutors and noted the woman managed to control her spending on her personal credit cards, but not the company card. How do lawyers get away with this without being disbarred? You know, I can understand being an advocate for a person, okay, and you're supposed to do the best possible job. But how are you allowed to outright lie as a lawyer without being disbarred? Answer. Because the judges are the same as you with a black robe. And there's no oversight, that's all. A shopaholic, that's some defense. That's like saying a guy is you can just fill in the blanks. Your Honor, it's not my client's fault. She has a birth defect. She was just born stupid. You know, there's no news other than a little war, two lackluster candidates running for the presidency, a president who is our president who is giving the country away whatever's left brick by brick now. He's down to the foundation now. $48 billion for AIDS in Africa, now letting people with HIV/AIDS. What's next? I told you that it's like a shock to the system, yet it's not being reported. I'd rather talk about raw foods. Omega-3 capsules. Someone just emailed me. I want to buy more omega-3 capsules, and now I see the store full of omega-3, 6, 9. Do you know what's up with that expansion of the omegas? Well, I don't know about omega-9s. I know omega-6s are found in vegetables. And I once worked in the vitamin industry, so I know a little bit about it. But unfortunately, the business is filled with con men, and that is a problem. A lot of them, you know, started with vitamin presses in their garage. And then they got very wealthy very fast. So the quality control is an issue with vitamins. And that is a big issue because you talk about, you know, we're talking about food contamination. How about vitamin contamination? How about you don't know what's in your pill? How about you don't know whether it's delivering what it states on the label? How about that? How about you don't know where it was made? That just because the label looks good doesn't mean it was made in a sanitary facility. When it comes to a vitamin product, you have to go with a pharmaceutical-grade product, whether it's herbal or vitamin, if you can find it. I'm pretty good. I will never give you a brand name, but I know where to get them. I don't sell those, and I'm not going to. Believe me, I could have put out a Dr. Savage multivitamin a long time ago and made a fortune. I'm just not into that. I'm working on my book. It's really about it. I don't want to do anything else other than the movie. After the book comes out in 08, God willing, and I win my case against CARE, and I get over some of the other defamations against me by people who don't even know where I stand, I'm going to set the record straight in a movie. Whether it's a big hit, I don't know. Just think of it. Michael Savage on a marquee in your neighborhood. What the liberals will march against it. which is almost the only reason I want to do it at this point, is the wonderful believers in free speech telling you you shouldn't go to the movie. That's a laugh. The coming of fascism in the United States of America. No, they did not march with swastikas this time. No, it was not Adolf Hitler. No, it was the good progressive who took away freedom of speech, and freedom of the press, all in the name of freedom. But who predicted this? Certainly before me, there were others who saw it coming. And the most, I was amazed to see that Ray Bradbury, in his novel Fahrenheit 451, which was published in 1949, the first edition, 1947, was way ahead of the pack on this. Ray Bradbury, would you believe it, predicted a future American society in which the masses are hedonistic and critical thought through reading is outlawed. Fahrenheit 451 takes place in an unspecified future time in a hedonistic and rapidly anti-intellectual America that has completely abandoned self-control. Okay? Think Paris Hilton. Think Lindsay Lohan. Filled with lawlessness in the streets. Think San Francisco. From teenagers crashing cars into people to firemen who set their mechanical hound to hunt various animals, blah, 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 and they were burning books. Anyone caught reading books in this future society is at the minimum confined to a mental hospital while the books are burned. And that, of course, would be Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats who first want to burn talk radio to the ground. Then they will come for the books. They've already done it. They banned the Random House. The once great Random House, which ceased being great 25 years ago, incidentally, when it was sold to, I think, Bertelsmann in the 70s. That was the beginning of the end of Random House. Random House canceled a book on Islam. A novel, no less. A novel. You hear this? Books are burned. Illegal books may include works of literature such as Whitman and Faulkner, as well as the Bible and all historical texts. Sounds like America today. Fahrenheit 451, Ray Bradbury. Then the movie wasn't banned in 66. I haven't re-seen it in a while. I don't know if I liked the movie when it came out. I don't remember that much. It was a big hit amongst the people I knew. Little did we know it was the liberals who would bring about the book burnings. Oh, they don't actually burn books. They just ban them. And they don't actually ban them. What they do is they don't publish them. And they don't actually don't publish them. They don't even show them in the bookstore. So like when my books came out, four in a row bestsellers, you had to go ask for them. The wonderful advanced progressives in the bookstores would take my books and put them in the business section, for example, or hide them. The great literary geniuses are all waiting to be this. All the James Joycetts in the bookstore, oh, they're all waiting to be discovered. They're all great geniuses in bookstores. Just by being around books, they're already literary. They have a great taste. They know everything about literature. So what would you like to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. Shopaholic defense fails to sway. Thank God. What did I want to tell you about the Golden Gate Bridge? Something. I forgot already. Since I live here and I drive over it once a week, twice a week. I was going to tell you something about the Golden Gate Bridge. Oh, the crooks who run it won't even put a barrier on it. And then they keep raising the rates and because they own the contractors which repair the bridge. Is that what I wanted to tell you about the Golden Gate Bridge? Oh, yeah, how come they own it? How could the bridge be owned by anybody? How could someone use it as a cash cow for all these years? Why doesn't the state own the Golden Gate Bridge? Answer, because they're probably bigger thieves than the private contractors who own it. And we have a homicide epidemic in the city, but that doesn't stop the mayor from fiddling in Africa, nor the newspapers from not reporting it. It's an out-of-control homicide epidemic. The newspapers won't even report it. That's why the newspapers are dying, because they've ceased to be of any value to the average reader. SF homicide rate. You wouldn't know it. And it's hush-hush, my darling. Hush-hush, my darling. Don't talk about it. It's bad for business. You got a man shot and killed with his grown sons by an MS-13 gang member who was hidden and protected by the district attorney in the mayor's office, and neither the district attorney nor the mayor or any of the people who are responsible for the deaths of Mr. Bologna and his two sons have either lost their job, been investigated by the FBI, or been fired. It's amazing to me how they – I don't understand this. I don't understand how this works. I don't understand how this can get worse in this city other than it will. When you have lawlessness like this that goes unpunished – which it does, and you have a political class that does not pay for their deficits, does not pay for their negligence, you want to put it to you that way, it is going to get much worse before it gets better. And nothing short of the federal government seizing the city and taking it over the way they did with some Midwestern cities during Prohibition is going to save this city. But the Republicans don't have the horsepower to do it, but that's what they should do. The FBI should come to City Hall and take over this city and fire the entire administration and put in reliable FBI agents until a new election can be held. Because right now the people are out of patience with this city. And we have a Nero running the city. A Nero in love with himself, like a John Edwards. A Nero. Our personal Nero. He diddles while San Francisco burns, in essence. Anyway, you don't want to talk about that. It's only San Francisco. And you say, well, what do you expect in San Francisco? It hasn't always been this way. No, it wasn't always this way. No, it was not always this way. It's always been a tolerant city ever since the Gold Rush. But there's a huge difference between tolerance and insanity. And there's a huge difference between tolerance and lawlessness. And there's a huge difference between true tolerance and criminality. And there's a huge difference between tolerance and corruption. Make no mistake about it. Don't mix up the words and the concepts. We don't have tolerance in this city. We have everything else that I just mentioned. We have a police chief whose hat falls off her head, who failed to qualify for aiming and shooting a gun. If it was a cop, he would be thrown off the force. Why is she in that position? Why do we have a female fire chief who can't lift a hose? Why do we have city workers who hide gangbangers from the federal government who haven't gone to jail for aiding and abetting? Why? How did the city devolve like this? Not everybody's in favor of this kind of insanity. It's a small class of maniacs who are like spoiled brats who scream and yell if they don't get their way. And let me tell you something, a tough leader in this city could take those brats and they could jail them and say, you know what, the 60s are over, shut your mouth, get off the street, and when you come out with your bicycles on a critical mass, we're going to arrest you, we're going to seize your bicycles, you're going to go to jail for 30 days. You're not going to disturb the public order, and that's the end of it. But we don't have leadership in this city. We have no leadership in the state. We have no leadership in the federal level, do we? Where's the leadership? That's why we're all interested in this, to take it all the way back to the Russia-Georgia thing. You don't have to be a fan of Putin. In fact, I hope you're not a fan of Putin, to understand why people want a strong leader. Because I can guarantee you there's no critical mass in Moscow. I can guarantee you the police in Moscow would break someone's skull open if they blocked traffic on a Friday afternoon when people who worked all day were trying to get home, or somebody was trying to get to a hospital to deliver a baby. And these brats, these jesters in costumes who want to show you their posterior with their bicycles. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Thank God I haven't had to talk about Obama. My God. Thank God he's on vacation. I hope he stays there an extra few weeks. Thank God the Anointed One is surfing in Hawaii. Is McCain still on the campaign trail? I mean, when Obama's gone, they don't even cover poor McCain. Obama's gone. You know, when they cover Obama, which is every second in the midstream media, they throw in a token McCain. He gives a speech in a plant somewhere. Now that Obama's not there, they're not even covering McCain. Is he doing any? Did he say anything about any? He did. Wait a minute. We have a speech of his. Hold it. Actually, to be fair to the subject, John McCain speaking about the Georgia conflict. Let's hear 04.
The impact of Russian actions goes beyond their threat to a democratic Georgia. Russia has used violence against Georgia to send a signal to any country that chooses to associate with the West and aspire to our shared political and economic values.
Well, really, they used violence. Now, would you say we used violence in Iraq, John, to send a signal to the Islamists? It seems to me that's what makes you a great nation, are signals. Sometimes you send signals peacefully. Sometimes you send them economically. Sometimes you send them through trade. Sometimes you send them through war. So I wouldn't say Russia's the only nation sending signals through violence, John. I think that's rather one-sided. Then we have Nancy Pelosi with her flop book, interviewed by the old friend of the Democrats, Larry King. Larry King. You know, you do a book, and you go to Larry King, and it goes nowhere anyway. Why do you suppose... This is an interesting story to me. It's a great victory to me to see that all these political books fail, and that I, an unknown man, with no Larry King, no Good Morning America, no book tour, I don't do book tours. How does that work? How come I could have four hardcover bestsellers in a row? And I am boasting, I admit it. While Nancy Pelosi, with all of her power, can only sell a few thousand copies, if that. Why is that? Explain that to me, that they're so out of touch with reality that they think you want to buy their book? And what does it tell you about the midstream media like Larry King that they can't boost book sales for these people, their friends, or GMA? Why is it that I could sell my books through you? I'll be very – can I talk about this for a minute, if you don't mind? My new book, which I'm working on feverishly, and I have to get it to the printer in a few weeks so I can get it to you in time for the holidays – and I'm going to announce it very soon, start reading from it after Labor Day. And I hope you like it because it's really the most important book I've ever written. It's my autobiography through my stories, my radio stories. I am not publishing the book through a publisher. I'm self-publishing the book. It's not even going to be in the bookstores. If it is at all, it'll be in 09. Until all through 08, it's going to only be through my website, period. No other way. Now, I'm suspecting that I'll sell the book fairly well to you, my loyal listener, based upon my first book, The Savage Nation, which sold over 330,000 copies in hardcover. Think about that. You know, that's a phenomenal number of books. 300,000 books in hardcover, the first book. Then the others sold over 100,000, all of them. The second sold over 200,000 in hardcover. I wasn't on any radio. You know, in the beginning, I was on the cable shows when... But after that, I wasn't on their shows. Good luck to them. I have nothing against them. Honest to God, it's all, just to me, it's all like a fraternity ribbing each other on the same team. I don't need them. They don't need me. Good luck to them. It's a big world. God bless them. They won't be on my show. I won't be on their show. But the point I'm making is, how is it that this audience is so loyal to this show? You know, I have a Savage Legal Defense Fund in this battle because I'm not quitting. I'm not going to stop. And I recently send out a mailing to 25,000 people have donated. Do you know that over 25,000 people, you're probably one of them listening to the show, sent some money in? Various amounts. 25,000 people have contributed to the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund, some of whom are liberals who understand what free speech is. I want you to understand how phenomenal that is. I've never sold a list, and I won't sell a list. I will not share the list. I will not sell the list, as most people do. Ever. Ever. I won't do it. I preserve your identity, and I consider this to be an important trust between you and me. I have an audience that's different than any other radio audience. It's not only a fanatic audience, it's also a very activist audience. And how John McCain cannot understand that he cannot win without you. I mean, I wish him great luck, but if he won't come on this show, and he won't go and give interviews to the websites that are conservative, and he won't go on any other conservative radio show, how does John McCain expect to win? You know, my audience votes. Now, they're going to vote one way or the other, most of them, but not all of them. There are millions of voters out there who will not even vote in this election. They will not vote because they don't like John McCain well enough to go out. That could all change if John McCain only understood what he must do in order to win the conservative base. Thus far, he has not even touched it. He appeals to La Raza. He appeals to the NAACP. He goes to groups that will never vote for him. Never. And he gives the middle finger to the only groups that could put him over the top. Is he a fall guy, or does he really want to win, is the question.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation, of course, the war in the Caucasus, which looks like a little war, seems to be winding down, but the ramifications have yet to begin. And that's the interesting question, because something happened here that it's going to take time for all of us to digest. We could have predicted that Russia would react this way, or that Russia was going to do this, whether there was a reaction or an action, I don't know. In other words, whether Georgia moved against the Russia that was already on the move, or Russia reacted to Georgia's moves, is hard to say at this time. Only the intelligence services could answer that question. I don't think we're ever going to get that answer. But something's happening here, and we know that Putin wants to rebuild the ex-Soviet Union. It's a given fact. He's the former head of the KGB, and he has a mixed economy of capitalism and communism, as does China. It's a mixed capitalist-communist economy. But never forget that Hitler's economy was a mixed socialist-capitalist economy, and look where that led the world. Now, whether we're going to face, God forbid, horrible battles, devastation across the planet, nuclear confrontation between Israel and Iran, great sea battles, a bombing of one of our cities, God forbid, weapons of mass destruction, bacteriological, striking New York, God forbid, we don't know. We really don't know, but there's something in all of us that worries about these things. And I know that we worry about these things. I know people in the back of their minds fear these things because all of these apocalyptical events could occur. And when we see a war like this that came out of nowhere, it reminds us just how fragile the peace really is. And what holds civilization together is extremely fragile. And that is why we appeal to our leaders like powerless children, begging them to close the border with Mexico, begging them to get the violent criminals out of the country back to where they came from, begging them to take down the gangs before they take over cities. And they seem to be doing very little about these problems. Instead, as I say, fiddling like Nero while so much is crumbling around us. I don't mean it's dramatically crumbling around us. We live in the greatest country in the greatest time in history. We understand that. It's a Technicolor dream. It's a Walt Disney dream that we live in. But right beyond this Walt Disney dream is the black and white version of the movie, which I unfortunately see at the same time that I live and see the color version of the life that I'm leading. I guess I'm a strange person. I always see a black and white movie behind the color variety. Why is that? Why is that? Is that a mental illness? Will that be declared a mental illness soon in this country by the Western psychiatric establishment, which is very much a part and parcel of government's societal control? You know, it was used in the Soviet Union to drug and treat anyone who didn't see the wonders of great communism. They said, oh, you don't see the beauties of Mother Russia? You don't see the wonders of the Soviet system? Then you are mentally ill. And against your will, you disappeared in the black car and they put you in gulag. They treated you with drugs, all with the help of medical doctors. I've been trying to warn you what's happened to the medical establishment in this country and how the pharmaceutical firms, working hand in glove with the doctors and the government, are on the verge of taking over your life from cradle to grave. That's what this show has been about from the day I began it. It's about not giving up your independence to any authority. Now, having said that, let's come back to the meat and potatoes of today's news instead of getting too esoteric or too disconnected. What happened and what is still happening in Georgia, a place most of us never heard about until the other day. In fact, it's rather bizarre that it's called Georgia to most Americans for the obvious reason that we have a state by the same name. So now we know that something about it. We know it's somewhere over there, somewhere in the ex-Soviet Union or whatever. We know it's over there in that mess of lands that we know nothing about. We know something about the dictator called Stalin, Steel Man, an invented name, by the way, that he was from Georgia. That's about it. But we also know that Vladimir Putin, think Rasputin, don't say Putin, because his name is Putin. And if he hears you calling him Putin when his name is Putin. Cliff in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, how you doing, my brother? Long time.
I want to mention that. That's the enemy station. But anyway, what's on your mind, Cliff?
Okay, my brother, is I'd like for your opinion and your synopsis on this situation in Georgia. Me, myself, I'm coming from a position where this is the big oomph from that bear that's going to invade Israel from the north, as the book of Ezekiel declared that Gog and Magog would do that. Now, I would like for you to, I know you're a man of the Bible, and I'd like for you to read those scriptures verbatim on your show today, so people can really realize what we.
Well, I don't happen to have my Bible with me. I'm in another studio. I move around a bit, Cliff, and I don't have the Bible. That's in one of my studios. I'm in another one today. But yeah, I remember we talked about that, the biblical prophecy of Ezekiel in particular, that the forces will come to Israel from the north. It's interesting to me that Russia took the side of Iran in this recent competition between Iran and the West, that Russia took the side of Iran. I was very disappointed in that. And I would have thought Russia would have seen a world order that would have been a lot better if the maniacs in Iran were constrained. You see the biblical view. You believe that as a verbatim document, that you believe this is going to happen?
Mike, when two-thirds of the Bible have already been fulfilled literally to the T, when they said that Roman soldier was going to stick the spear in Jesus' side and water and blood was going to come out, that literally came to pass. Now,
if you read the Bible literally and you take Ezekiel literally, then a major nuclear confrontation will occur in the Middle East. And the major aggressor, in this case Iran, perhaps with Russia, will have broken a promise to not use nuclear weapons in warfare. And all of our naval fleets that are in the Persian Gulf right now, all five of the fleets, will frankly be ruined from the violence of any such war. It's a terrible thing to say. What will happen when radioactive fallout, if God forbid, is disseminated? Will the Bible come to pass again where millions of bodies will float in blood? Because the Bible predicts seas of blood. You know that, Cliff.
I absolutely know that, Michael, but what I'm trying to explain to you, if two-thirds of what already has been prophesied by Elijah, Ezekiel, Zephaniah, Zechariah, all the major prophets of the Bible have predicted things, and two-thirds of that has come to pass, literally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am not a biblical absolutist. However, I know there are people who are. There are those who believe that Nostradamus, on another level, is predictive of virtually everything that has occurred and has predicted what will occur, including prophecies of Nostradamus predicting World War III. Do you live with that reality? Do you live in that reality? Do you believe that there will be a World War III of that magnitude with massive land, naval, and air battles? With bacteriological warfare, with hunger, fire, plagues spreading throughout the globe? Do you actually believe that?
Mike, what I believe is what the Bible says, that every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Now, when Jesus come back and set his foot on the Mount of Olives, it's not going to come back. He's not going to come back as a baby. The book of Revelation declares that
Cliff, I'm just almost out of time. I don't mean to be rude nor cut you off. I know how sincere this is to you. But remember, there are other religions on the earth, and they see the world in other ways. In a moment, we're going to talk about something very serious with a guest that I interviewed much earlier, and I hope you get as much out of it as I did. You're not going to want to miss it.
Savage.
Probably heard me talk about Bush appointee Karen Hughes. Remember her? Anti-terrorism expert under Bush. funneling millions of dollars to radical Islamist groups? That's right. To give us some more on this horrible story, we're talking with Stephen Emerson, who is an internationally recognized expert on terrorism and national security and a best-selling author who has testified before and briefed Congress dozens of times on terrorist financing and operational networks of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and the rest of the worldwide Islamic militant spectrum. Steve Emerson, welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is crazy.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be here with you.
So give us some background here. I remember her, but who is Karen Hughes for my audience?
Karen Hughes was a close friend and still is of the president, who worked as a top official in the White House until 2005, when she was appointed Undersecretary of State for Public Affairs, Public Diplomacy at the State Department. And in that capacity, she was entrusted with the, quote, outreach program to the Muslim world, including the Muslim community in the United States. And what I did was examine all of the programs she had initiated under her tenure, which I determined to be a total disaster and a policy of appeasement to radical Muslims.
Well, who was watching what she actually did, and who did she give money to?
Well, that's a great, you know, the radical Islamic groups got monies. They were sponsored to go overseas. There were radical Muslim clerics brought into the United States. She met with groups that were under criminal, unindicted co-conspirator status in terrorist trials. Nobody was overseeing her. She didn't answer to the Secretary of State. Not that the Secretary of State would have done anything, but she just did whatever she wanted. No oversight. And as a consequence, she ended up empowering Islamic militants around the world and in the United States in a manner that was absolutely disgraceful and scandalous. The president appointed her this position. It was sort of a sweetheart arrangement for all her hard work and dedication. She knew nothing about diplomacy. What she was good at, you know, was marketing. And she got this incredibly sensitive job in which she was totally unqualified for. But because the president gave her the appointment, which was his mistake, she then pursued her agenda, which I don't think was malicious. I think it was naivete and stupidity. I don't think she was pro-terror. She just didn't know who she was meeting with. You know, it would be like meeting with David Duke of the Ku Klux Klan and saying, he's a nice guy.
What can we do about this now? Is she still in this position?
No, she left. And I testified just a couple weeks ago about the support extended to radical Islam by Karen Hughes and other departments. Congress is finally exercising oversight, and kudos to Congressman Brad Sherman in California, who led a subcommittee on terrorism hearing that exposed the activities of the government, including the State Department, and Karen Hughes in particular. The interesting thing was that at the hearing, the only support he got was from the Republicans. Here would have been an ideal opportunity for Democrats to embarrass the administration by, you know, criticizing Karen Hughes and the policies she pursued in promoting radical Islam, I mean, unwittingly, by giving them grants and hosting them. Instead, the Democrats just backed off and wouldn't say a word against her or the State Department or the policy of appeasement. I found that remarkable. In fact, as you probably are aware, there was a memo issued by the State Department and Homeland Security earlier this year that said U.S. policy now is to prohibit the use of the term Islamic terrorism, Islamic militant, or jihad. It was a politically correct speech code gone haywire. I mean, so no one was allowed, as a result of that memo, to use the word Islamic terrorism or Islamic militant. You could only use the word terrorism. You couldn't identify who the terrorists were. This was a memo put out by the State Department and by the Homeland Security. In the House of Representatives 3 weeks ago, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, the vice chair of the Intel Committee, proposed an amendment that would deny U.S. funding or congressional authorization for funds to implement that memo. In other words, it would essentially negate that memo. Well, he didn't think he would get it passed. He got it passed, 250 like to 180, but all his opponents were Democrats. Again, here what would have been opportunist perspective, a great opportunity for someone to embarrass the administration, especially Democrats. In the end, it was the Democrats that tried to uphold the administration politically correct language on prohibiting the use of the term Islamic militant.
How can we fight, let alone win, a war against an enemy if we're not even allowed to name them?
That's exactly it. That's exactly the point. You cannot fight a war if you can't name your enemy. If your hands are tied, you can't even name your enemy. The battle is lost. We've met the enemy, and it is us. We're the ones that are imposing this defeat on ourselves. Radical Islam is an ideology. It has to be defeated by discrediting it, by denouncing it. And even former radical Muslims who have converted to being moderate and have renounced their radical affiliations say that you must use the term Islamic terrorist. The only ones who don't want to use the term Islamic terrorist are the radical Muslims, like the Council on American Islamic Relations, or the Islamic Society of North America, or the Muslim American Society. All these groups say it's racism to use the term radical Islam. Well, you know what? That's because they are members of the radical Islamic community.
The big question is, why are we giving money to these groups?
Well, you know, it's a combination of no oversight and combination of naivete, stupidity, and there may be even an ideological sympathy with some of the radical Muslims as being legitimate, as having legitimate grievances, which would be even more outrageous.
Are there oversights in place now to prevent this from happening again?
No, it's still going on. It's still going on to this day. The arrogance of the State Department, of bureaucrats. Look, there are many good government officials, those at the FBI, those at the Department of Justice, those at Homeland Security, that are absolutely repelled by this incredibly counterproductive policy of legitimizing radical Islamic groups. But they don't have the sway. They don't control the policy.
Stephen Emerson, unbelievable. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, thanks for having me on again. We should do it more often.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. California has not always been the liberal capital of the United States as it is now. The media moguls, multiculturalists, union bosses, and eco-warriors who run California have turned it from the Golden State to America's self-indulgent, overtaxed, overregulated version of Rome. Huh. Our next guest, Jack Cashel, has written a book looking at what's the matter with California. Jack Cashel, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on, and it's always a pleasure. I listen to your show. No one does what you do as well as you do.
Give us some background of the book.
In the way of background, Mike, there was a book that came out about 2 or 3 years ago called What's the Matter with Kansas, which was a huge bestseller. Unfortunately, it was a preposterous book, a typical sort of left-wing assault on mid-American values. Curiously, I was featured in the book, despite the fact that I was born and raised in New Jersey, went to high school and college in New York, graduate school in Indiana, and live and work in Missouri. I haven't spent 2 nights and my life in Kansas, and he did a 5-page profile on me without ever talking to me. So I thought I'd return the favor by doing a book on California, where the pathologies are obvious and the solutions are just as obvious, but most people, at least the people in control, refuse to see what they are.
When did things, in your opinion, start to go wrong with this great state?
Well, you know, in 1962 was California's high water mark. That was the year that California passed New York State in population, became the most popular state in the Union, and the most golden spot on the planet. Every magazine cover everywhere featured California. What a wonderful place it was. And in 62, Mike, the tax dollars that were being raised in California were being spent on the best educational system in the world, the best infrastructure in the world, the best waterway system in the world, the best colleges in the world. And then within 10 years, 15 years, they were being spent on Medicaid, on prisons, on crime, on welfare, on all of those things that go to create and sustain a dependent population. And that's when it started changing in the 60s, like it did every place else. It just changed quicker and harder in California.
The big one that most Californians fear today isn't an upcoming earthquake, but a cultural cataclysm.
Right. What I describe a system of what I call cultural tectonics. In real geology, all these various oceanic islands rammed into each other and formed California relatively late in the game, and the fault lines are obvious, and there's lots of friction. Well, the culture of California has been roughly the same. I mean, for the last couple hundred years, one cultural group after another has become ramming into that island, fusing together. Now, in the past, they were held together in place by a shared belief in America, a shared belief in the state, a shared belief in progress, a shared belief in a sort of a benign Judeo-Christian tradition. All of those things that once held California together have been stripped away. And now all these groups just sort of jar and jolt against each other. And I color code them in the book to make it, you know, easier to follow. And some of the clashes, the tectonic clashes in California, no one wants to talk about because they're within the larger blue umbrella. Things like the black-brown clash, which it has explosive potential, especially in the schools and in the prisons, or the green-brown clash, which is less well-known, but it's there because the same people who are in favor of illegal immigration are against development. So they want these people to move to California. They just want them to stay in their cousins' garages. There's fault lines on top of fault lines, and there's clashes on top of clashes, and one of these days you're going to have a major blowout, the big one.
What role did the environmental movement have?
Oh, it plays a major role, and all the bad things in California trace back to 1969. I mean, 1969 was the year of Charles Manson, the year of no-fault divorce, the year of Altamont, the year of Bishop Pike's death. It also was the year in which the Santa Barbara oil spill took place, which was a seminal event in the environmental history of the United States. 3,500 birds were killed. You know, you'd think that 3,500 people were killed on how overwrought the people of Santa Barbara were. It's such a pristine, beautiful place. How dare anyone sully that place with something so commercial as oil? I mean, Long Beach, that's okay, but not in Santa Barbara. That began a whole series of laws that made it impossible, essentially, to create new power for California. They became dependent on power for everyone else. And thus, that led to the rolling blackouts of 2000, 2001. And even during the middle of the blackouts, Mike, people were saying, well, no, I wouldn't want new power plants of any kind built in this state. 12% of the people wanted no new power of any sort, and more than half said to turn their backs on offshore drilling, more than half turned their backs on nuclear, more than half turns their back on lessening environmental regulations. So you've regulated the state into near poverty. Part of the reason the housing prices were so high is because the greening, the sustainability regulations were so crazy. So what the affluent environmentalists were doing was pricing everyone else out of the state so they can enjoy their pristine little environment. You know, I grew up in New Jersey where, you know, you didn't expect a diamond lane on the parkway, and you didn't expect beaches where you could run naked on. All you wanted was like 4 square feet where you could throw your blanket down, you know. California people have higher expectations, and those higher expectations are driving the state into bankruptcy.
And how about the role of no-fault divorce?
Well, you know, Mike, when I started researching the book, I didn't even have divorce in my proposal. I didn't realize how important a role it played. But what happened was all these families moved out to California after the war. It's the greatest middle-class migration in history. And a lot of these people didn't have a friend or a relative in their time zone. And it put an enormous amount of stress on families. When this family started falling apart, the state responded by passing a no-fault divorce law to make divorce easier. So the net result is by 1970, you had more divorces than you had marriages in 1960. And the kids in these families are going on to become the rulers of the state. They share a lot of the pathologies that kids of divorce have, and that is this anxiety about the future. I mean, they could confuse a new strip mall with the end of the world as we know it. They're so anxious about the future. And they themselves didn't form good families. And then they began to lack the moral authority to tell other families, poorer families, that staying together was a good thing. So they began, in a sense, through the culture, through their control of Hollywood and the media, where divorce has been normative for generations, that the family is just an incidental thing, that one family is as good as another. A gay family is as good as a straight family. A family with a mother is as good as a two-parent family. And the net result has been just a fractured population that lost its sense of cohesiveness and moral continuity.
Do you think it'll get worse before it gets better?
I'm afraid it will get worse before it gets better. And I'm afraid that the worsening will be obvious within 3 to 5 years, and I think it'll be most visible as a budget crisis, which will force other crises. But you're spending so much money on things you didn't have to spend money on. Used to. For instance, there are 7 times as many people in prison in California as there were just 25 years ago. That's not to say they don't belong there. You know, you've allowed a culture to fester that makes prison the likely outcome for many of California's young men. I mean, not you personally, but the liberals who run the state of California.
Well, how did the crime rate in California get so high?
Well, you know, just one way to think about it is going back to 1969, bad year. And that was also the year the Crips, that neighborhood association known as the Crips, was founded in Los Angeles. The two co-founders, guys Stanley Tookie Williams, who ended his day on San Quentin's death row, and Raymond Washington, founded it in 1969. They were both born in 1953 in the South, moved to Los Angeles, where their families promptly fell apart. Now, in the year of their birth, in 1953, there were 276 murders in the entire state of California. In 1980, they were both off the streets. Washington had been killed. Williams had done a multicultural trifecta, killing blacks, whites, and Asians in the same calendar year on his way to San Quentin. Now, 276 murders in 1953. You know how many there were in 1980? 3,411. In those 27 years, the murder numbers had multiplied 14 times. The murder rate doubled 7 times because the population doubled. 7 times more murders after 27 years of incredible prosperity, incredible opportunity, education for everyone, health, welfare off the charts, the richest place on the planet, and the murder rate went up 7 times, and the people who run the state don't even ask themselves why. And it was after that, of course, that the justice system started catching up with the murder rate, and they started imprisoning people, which stabilized the murder rate. But now we have 7 times more people in prison than we did in 1980.
What should we all pick up on in your book?
I would say, you know, the biggest problem in California, and elsewhere to a lesser degree, but in California especially, in fact, it's so frequent that I had to give it an acronym for a name, and I call it ABETTO, A-B-E-T-T-O, A Blind Eye to the Obvious. The good thought thinkers in California absolutely refuse to see what's in front of them, what you and I see, what the listeners to your show see, what most Americans see. I mean, they see illegal immigration, they think it's a good thing, you know. They see families living out of wedlock, and they think that's an okay thing. They see gay marriage, and they see that as a progress and a sign in the future. Until they begin to see these things as the pathologies they are, they're not going to be able to change anything. And this whole thing is going to come crashing down on their heads.
You think California has a chance to recover?
California has a chance. I mean, it has so much going for it. It's such a gorgeous place. It has a terrific entrepreneurial history and spirit and even present. It's got some good immigration patterns, especially, you know, in the Asian populations, which are pretty strongly represented, certainly in the university system. It will, I think, do well in the future. I think, but the next 3 to 5 to 10 years is going to be rough. They're going to have to transition from this. Right now, the state assembly is totally in the grips of the left. It has been for the last generation. And until they break that monopoly, until they begin to see the connection between fiscal problems and social problems, they're going to be ground into debt, into crime, into dependency, and to nearly third world status.
Jack Cashel, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Mike, thanks for having me. It's always a blast. Keep up the good work, and onwards and upwards.
Savage.
Fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go.
Little Beatles on the Savage Nation. It's not Rock and Roll Friday yet. It's chicken curry. Well, it used to be chicken curry Tuesday. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. No matter what we talk about, no matter what interviews I have done, no matter what witticisms I might try, you only want to talk about, well, I understand it, Russia and Georgia, Georgia and Russia. But I think I've covered the topic as best I can, and any more would be a waste of my time and yours. What more can we say that hasn't been said? You'll say Russia was right, and the others will say Georgia was defending itself. The other one will say Putin is no good. The next will say you can't trust him, but he is good for the Russian people. And so I think that at this point, unless something new occurs, I'm going to move on from that topic. Portland, Oregon, KXL, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I am a I'm a vet of the both Iraq and Afghan conflicts, and I need to say to you that when you start talking about the gamma, how both people running for gammas, I literally spit out what I was drinking on the windshield. I do find that there are definite similarities between the two. For example, how...
Wait, Chris, hold on. You're a veteran of wars, but you're very literate because you know when I said gammas, you knew what I was referring to. Tell the audience what I mean when I say gammas.
Well, in Aldous Huxley's book, The Brave New World, in a future society that they were... the people were not given birth to naturally. They were divided into classes before they were born as eggs and incubated.
Yes, sir.
Certain classes were subjected to certain treatment to assess their level of influence on the society and the job they would have, and et cetera.
Now, what's interesting to me, Chris, is that according to John Kerry, it was only the uneducated who went off to war. I would doubt that he could have given a discourse on the gammas as well as you just did.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, the elites like to think that they're alphas, but as far as I can tell, they more closely approximate the gammas, who are mocking the alphas that once ran this great country. And unfortunately, most of us watch and see these gammas running America. You can't tell me Bush is an alpha, can you?
No. I definitely cannot tell you that.
No, you're a man who fought in two wars, and I don't think you consider him a sterling commander-in-chief.
No, I do not, sir.
What are you as a military guy, just a man in the street like myself, but not a military guy in my case, think of Putin's 5 days in Georgia? Do you think that he used tactics that the U.S. military was unable and is unable to use because they're not ruled by the same rule book?
Well, sir, I am no longer in the service, but however, Russia is doing what we should do. I do agree with you. When you're going to fight an enemy, it's your enemy. You need to bombard them and completely dominate them and not try to dominate the PR.
Thank you. In other words, it's either war or it's a police action. I don't think Bush understands the difference. And I believe his advisors have sapped the nation's morale and their finances by confusing the two.
Yes, sir. No, I definitely agree with you there. You know, fighting this kind of like, you know, left-handed war with one hand tied behind your back. Well, it's only 1,000 casualties a month. It's way better than another war. But at the same time, you know, dumping all this money into it. And with the same time, you know, the city that I left, when I came back, was overrun with illegals. I don't even want to get into it. But
That's right. The National Guard should be on our border with Mexico. The money for reconstruction should be used on our highways and our streets, which are broken. The money that's being poured down the rat hole of Iraq and Afghanistan should be used to get the homeless bums off the street and put them into places where they can have some dignity, mainly places that will clean them up and give them the medical care they need and then put them to work performing the duties that the illegals are doing. Then we'd have a cleaner society and a better society. The whole society is not being run by alphas. It's being run by gammas and deltas. My friend, thank you for the call. Aldous Huxley. Great influence on Michael Savage. It's interesting that you mention it because I was once so fanatically enamored of Aldous Huxley that I traveled. Oh, my God. This story's not in my autobiography. It's funny how many stories keep coming up that are not in the book, but maybe there'll be a second volume. I once traveled to Los Angeles from New York to visit Laura Archera Huxley after Huxley had died. And those of you know who I'm talking about, one of the great minds of the last century. The literary establishment sneered at him. He was not considered a literary figure, you know. He didn't walk around with a beret, and he wasn't communistic enough for the literary establishment, who have all become something less than literary. They're not even literal, but they're sort of what they are. So I drove out to the West Coast, and I visited Laura Archera Huxley in Los Angeles, and I'll never forget as long as I live. You know, here's a woman I had read about. And she talked about a young Mexican boy named Juan who was on the property who was godlike. He looked like a reincarnation of an Aztec. And she was with a famous woman, friend of hers. And she agreed to see me. I was a kid, you know. And I remember driving up Mulholland Drive. Now, you got to remember, a kid from New York gets to L.A. and drives in the summertime up to the top of Mulholland Drive. It's a miracle to see a road on the top of a mountain. I never saw anything like this. And when I got to his former home and there was a swimming pool in the yard overlooking Los Angeles and the whole valley, I could not believe that I was in an actual home on the earth. To me, it was like being in heaven itself. I remember chatting with her, and she told me something which, if I could recall, I'm trying to recall honorably and correctly so that I don't just say something to sound clever. I think she told me, see, they had belief in seances prior to his demise, Aldous Huxley and his widow. And they were very heavily into that whole L.A. thing at the time, the next world and seances. She told me that he told her from the next world that LSD, particularly the mushrooms, were completely harmful to the human being, and he made a mistake talking about the magic mushroom, and he wished he had not done it, that it was not all it had been professed to have been. That's what I believe she told me, that he spoke to her and told her that. Now, I was given that message. I really never said it until now. But what I'm saying is Huxley, it was such a big part of my mental development that I read every book he ever wrote, and I still have them somewhere with all my notes. Remember the days you'd read a book and write in the side? You'd underline, like you were gleaning knowledge that you never wanted to forget, till it reached a point where you're underlining so much that you're underlining most of the book and you couldn't remember it anyway. You thought that your knowledge would go exponential if you read these great writers. Well, of course, you improved your intellect and your imagination. I don't know if you improved your intelligence any. I think your intelligence is sort of static. I believe your intelligence is genetic, and the rest you have to basically work with, whatever you've been given. You can use your intelligence or you can abuse your intelligence, but I think your intelligence is inherent in your brainstem. That's my opinion of it. But at the end of the day, here we are, and we all know where we're going, which is to an unknown place. And the day we come to understand that we're all going to the same unknown place, perhaps we can make this world a better place.
Savage.